Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Welcome to Stuff from the Science Lab from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey guys, and welcome to the podcast. This is Allison Lattermilk, the science editor at HowStuffWorks.com.
And this is Robert Lamb, science writer at HowStuffWorks.com. Tell me something, Allison. Have you ever stared in the mirror and tried to watch yourself aging?
Not really, because aging is kind of hard to detect. And, yeah. You know, apart from rooting around and seeing if there are any gray hairs or whatever.
Yeah. I know there's that one.
Have you?
No, because it sounds kind of boring, you know. But there's like that YouTube video, the guy who like took a picture of himself, like regular increments, and then like put them all together in like a slideshow, you know? And like that's an example where you could actually watch yourself age a little, you know?
Yeah.
But not by just looking into the mirror.
Right. It's hard to detect, but we know what's going on. I remember going to an exhibit at the MoMA in New York City a while back, and I got this book, and it was a photography exhibit, and the photographer took pictures every year of these four sisters. And so flipping through the book, you could see these women aging, you know, just as you flipped. And it was so cool, and it was so interesting.
Oh,
just,
wow.
I really dug that. But yeah, aging is definitely hard to notice.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you got a couple of gray hairs poking out overnight.
Then how do you know people are actually aging? How do you know you're actually aging? Let's see the proof of it. I don't see you aging right now, right?
You look like you're getting a little older.
Doing this podcast? Wasn't that? It makes it sound like this is a really hellacious podcast session.
Ear hair sprouting out of those earphones.
Yeah. Well, that just means I need a haircut. But the point I'm trying to make here is that another area that is very difficult to observe,
and one of the criticisms often thrown at it,
yeah, is how do you know there's evolution? Like
we can see it.
Yeah, let's see some evolution. I don't believe in evolution. Put some on the table. Dish out some evolution. Let's
give
see
me
it.
A side of evolution.
Yeah, put it in a bag. You can't do it, you know, because it's because evolution occurs at increments over a very long period of time, from generation to generation.
Right. And if you consider that Darwin's Origin of Species hasn't even been in print a mere 151 years, which is, you know, kind of a drop in the bucket.
Yeah, so, that's nothing on an evolutionary scale.
Right. So consider, you know, how short of a time period we've been looking. Mm-hmm. And that's not to discount the fossil record, because of course the fossil record does in fact provide us a good understanding of what's gone on in the past for organisms.
Yeah. But one of the things with looking back at fossils is you have like definite frozen moments in time, you know, in these different forms. But it's much harder to see the movement, to see like the change from one form to the next, you know.
Yeah. So we thought we'd cover a couple of evolution in action studies today.
Yeah. Yeah. These are examples of, yeah, evolution in action. And they're just great examples to really, you know, make evolution come alive.
Right.
To a certain extent.
And they're occurring today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so let's talk about the lizards. I feel like we always talk about lizards.
Yeah, well, lizards are great.
They are pretty great.
And, yeah, we have a couple of studies. The first one is really cool. This was a 2009 Penn State study.
Yep.
And it dealt with these little fence lizards, you know, kind of like these little dudes you see running around, you know, everywhere.
Yeah, 3 inches.
Yeah. And they're suffering from an invasion from the south, fire ants.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Poor little guys.
Yeah, and they're in an area where they've just over the several decades have suddenly had to deal with fire ants, and they've never had to deal with them before. And so this is a hallmark of evolution. You know, you have a species, and suddenly the game has changed. You know,
right? We have new food, we have new enemies, right. We have conflict.
Yeah, because the food thing is key, because it's not what you think. The fire ants can eat the lizards.
I was surprised by that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you would think. Obviously, the lizards are going to come out on top here, but they're not.
At least not
the ones that are newly exposed to the fire ants. So let's get into the details of the study.
Yeah. So what they decided to do was to look at these. It's like not all the lizards have encountered fire ants yet.
Okay.
Some have been dealing with them for as long as like 68 years, though.
Yeah. So they had four different groups, right?
Yeah.
And they were looking at four different groups of lizards that had been exposed to fire ants in different increments.
One group had never encountered fire ants, and then like one had encountered them for like 23 years, another had encountered them for somewhere in the neighborhood of like 40-something years, and then at the far extreme, there's the group that had been dealing with them for 68 years.
They were 68 long years of fire ants.
Veterans of the Great Lizard Fire Ant War right there.
So the researchers were trying to figure out, with time as a factor, how
they've adapted to this new stimuli, you know, and which ones are, you know, going to be better situated to deal with it. And apparently, like, the main defense against fire ants is to basically move your butt. because in the group that had, like, never encountered them before, like, they will just sit there, apparently, and the fire ants will crawl over them, and the lizard's defense is like, oh, I'm just going to be real still and shut my eyes.
Yeah, and they took it.
Yeah, and then they just get the bejesus stung
lizard.
Out of them, yeah. Whereas the ones that are used to it, they'll know, hey, I need to move, and
they flick them off.
Yeah, they'll flick them off, or they'll leap away, you know, etc. They have learned to deal with it.
The researchers observed this behavior, mm-hmm. whether the lizards could, you know, take it or get the heck out of there. But they also were interested in looking at the hind leg lengths of all the lizards. What did they find, Robert?
Well, they found that lizards living near fire ants. They're developing behaviors to increase their survival and evolving longer hind legs in response to the attacks from the fire ants.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so that was their exposure. It was the exposure, the length of exposure that correlated.
Yeah. And I should also mention that I believe one of the details in the study was that they didn't like kill a whole lot of lizards in the study. Like I think they were like saving the lizards before they could be stung to death.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so as cool as the study is, it's not quite speciation.
No, it's more like these are the movements, though, that can lead to it. But yeah, these lizards aren't becoming a new breed of lizard, a new species of lizard, mm-hmm. Rather.
But let's talk about where speciation may be occurring, in fact, in White Sands, New Mexico.
Yeah, this is another lizard study. This is a 2010 University of Idaho study, and I actually talked to one of the people tied up in the research for this story for Discovery News.
Cool.
Yeah,
I remember
back
editing
in
it.
January. Yeah, and this one deals with these brown lizards, traditionally brown lizards, but they live in an area called White Sands, New Mexico.
Right.
And why do you think it's called White Sands, New Mexico? Because there's white sand everywhere.
It sounds kind of nice.
And they're a brown lizard, though.
Yeah, and what is a lizard? One of the lizard's traditional defense mechanisms is camouflage.
Yeah, camouflage. So but these lizards have changed over time, over the course of say 2,000 to 5,000 years.
Right, since they arrived there mm-hmm. a couple thousand years ago.
Yeah, so they were exploring how they've changed pigment during this time. They've become these like white lizards.
Really?
That live in white sands. Yeah, and anyway, they made the argument that. That this is that one of the they've hit several of the road stops on the way to speciation. They've changed their color. That's a big one. But also they've started having a preference for light-colored lizards when it comes to breeding.
Really?
Yeah. So it's like they're, you know, sort of like imagine, it's like a line, you know, and one line is diverging slowly from the other. So, mm-hmm. Another 10,000 years, you know, you might have the white lizard and the brown lizard are separate species entirely.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But not as cool as the E. coli.
Yeah.
This is a fantastic study, and you guys may have heard it.
It goes back to what we were talking about with the generations. You know, it's like human generations. We can't really watch it spread from generation to generation. There haven't been that many generations since origin of species, you know, et cetera. But if you can find a species that has really small generations.
A short life cycle,
yeah.
Short-lived.
It's like pushing the fast forward button
right.
on evolution.
Right, right. And a lot of times the choice organisms might be Drosophila, your fruit flies, mm-hmm. or plain old bacteria. And in this case, back in 1998, it was E. coli, a single E. coli bacterium that a Michigan State University biologist used, and he started 12 laboratory populations with it.
Yeah, this is Professor Richard Linsky.
20 years' time, Linsky had 44,000 generations on his hands. So if we were studying humans, this would be a phenomenal amount of time.
Yeah, we'd be talking something in the neighborhood of like 3 million years of human evolution.
So Linsky observed the bacteria as they grew larger and faster in response to their lab diets. Then, what happened?
Well, you hit around the 31,500th generation.
Something special happened.
Yeah, suddenly they're able to, this one population of them are able to consume citrate, which is this nutrient that they've been surrounded by the whole time as part of their,
medium.
Yeah, their medium. It's kind of like imagine if you were like, it's like the
are you going to bring up the cats? Please
don't bring
up the cats.
That was one of my more way too complicated, metaphor, overly elaborate metaphors.
Robert has to find a way to work in cats into every podcast.
No, it's just kind of like the buffet bar was there.
Yes.
And they were eating most of it. And then one day suddenly they were able to eat the seafood portion of the buffet.
Good for them.
But in this case, it was the citrate. So suddenly you had citrate plus E. coli.
Yeah. So you wound up with a population of mutated citrate-consuming bacteria. And as you can imagine, that was a pretty handy ability to have. And so the population of that bacteria skyrocketed.
Mm-hmm.
And now they call these citrate plus E. coli.
Yep.
So here's also something very interesting about this experiment. You know, somebody's going to dismiss it as a one-time thing. Oh, it's a fluke or whatever it is. Well, Linsky had a solution for this. So the whole time, he and his team had been freezing samples every 500 generations. So he was able to do a rewind. And he was actually able to go back and replay some of the experiment and see if they could catch it again. I mean, this is so cool.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently they were, like when they went back and they like replayed it, they found that like something was occurring in this one population at the 20,000th or so generation.
Right,
like
right.
Some small changes that were leading up to this ability to metabolize citrate.
Yeah, and they're still working to figure out exactly what. Okay, so that's the question.
Yeah.
You know, what is the mechanism? If they could pinpoint it just a little bit more, that mm-hmm. would be great.
Yeah, just get down to the fine changes that are occurring. It reminds me a lot. I think there was like a Twilight Zone where like the humans were observing the evolution of like a micro biological. So it was more than microbiological. It's like a tiny little civilization, and like mm-hmm. they watched them grow, you know, develop like spaceships and stuff. And I think The Simpsons did a parody of it.
So, on a more sobering note, the ability of bacteria to evolve, or any organism to evolve, has pretty important implications, as you guys know. You know, especially when you're talking about our 50-plus year war against harmful bacteria. When you're talking about things like extensively drug-resistant tuberculosis,
mm-hmm.
And then there are other, you know, so that's definitely.
Yeah, in the same way that these citrate plus E. coli were suddenly able to deal with something in their environment that they hadn't, you know, been around for too terribly long, you know, we're having some very harmful microbes out there that are, you know, figuring out how to deal with the situations that we're throwing at them.
I will tell you, as a parent, it's sometimes terrifying to give your kid antibiotics. You know, I wonder, you know, is my kid going to evolve resistance to this? You know, it's just a little terrifying.
And then there's a whole side with insects and pesticides as well, you know, where insects developing a resistance to certain pesticides over time. We throw out these solutions and we don't really realize that nature is pretty good at evolving. It's pretty much all it does, you know. So given enough time, it's remarkable what people think, especially microorganisms will be able to do. Like, I was reading something the other day, researching stuff about plastics.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some predictions that, like, like tens and thousands of years, like, you know, you'll eventually have microbes that can really break down plastics in a way that we don't see today.
Right.
You know, because it's a new material. But give them enough time, they'll figure it out.
Yeah. In the meantime, maybe just bring your bags so you don't have to use plastic bags.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, that's always a good idea. So speaking of plastic bags, we got a plastic bag here full of reader mail.
Excellent.
Yeah. Let me grab. They're not really readers. Well, some of them are readers, but
listeners.
Primarily listeners, I guess. So we got one here from Alicia.
Oh, Alicia. She was the one who wrote into Fair to share her favorite bit of Cosmos.
Yeah. She's a fan of some of our cosmic entries in the podcast series here. And she says, "Hey, Allison and Robert. This is a little something that I remembered after listening to your podcasts about the birth of stars and planets. Though this is more relevant to the death of stars. I just wanted to share my favorite factoid ever from cosmology." It was on caps. The, quote, plasma soup, unquote, that resulted from the Big Bang consisted of only very small particles like protons, electrons, etc. But there weren't any heavier elements that would have higher atomic numbers. But from what I can tell from my simplistic understanding of physics, when stars began to coalesce, the force of gravity pulling on the outside of the stars would cause immense amounts of pressure on the particles in the middle, causing the nuclear fusion reactions and creating heavier and heavier elements. Thus, large stars would be able to create heavier elements closer to their centers. Then if a star dies and becomes a supernova, it sends its particles scattering far and wide throughout the galaxy to later clump and become part of other stars, planets, and what have you. While I am normally not a romantic, this literally means that we are all made of stardust. So, yeah, that's awesome. You know, we're all star stuff. So that's kind of neat. It kind of, you know, builds this whole, like, unity of the universe. You know, we are the universe, and the universe is us. So
it's very deep,
I can
dig
it. Yeah.
Thanks, Alicia.
And, and then we have another one here from, I thought it was from Allison Loudermilk at first. That would probably be cheap if you're writing in your own fan mail.
I'm not sending in any listener mail.
This one's from Natalie.
Oh, Natalie wrote in about Pavlov, right?
Oh, yeah, this is a long one. Here we go. Not as long as some of the...
And maybe just read some of the highlighted parts.
Okay. She says, "First of all, I just want to say I'm a big fan of the show. I'm addicted to listening to the podcast just before bed or in the quiet moments of my free time." So we should really keep the yelling down.
We should.
She might be trying to get to sleep. I'll have to keep that in mind. "Your topics are always very engaging and informative. Whenever I listen, I feel like I'm getting a brush up on concepts I missed while zoning out in high school science classes," which is great. That's pretty much, that's part of the whole mission here. She says, "I just finished listening to your podcast, World Changing Science Experiments Part 2, and was very interested in the section on Pavlov and his experiments with dogs, but had to send an email to let you know a side of Pavlov that is generally unknown to most. I just graduated in May 2010 from CU Denver with a bachelor's degree in psychology, and during my history of psychology class, we discussed Pavlov's work in great detail. I was surprised and disturbed to find that Pavlov used children, orphans in fact, in the same manner as dogs in his experiments."
I had never heard this.
Yeah. "And once he discovered that he could condition any unconditioned response, he wanted to see if humans would react in the same way." She goes on to say, "Much to my surprise, my professor showed a video of Pavlov working with both his children and his dogs, or both his dogs and these children. Despite this discovery, I'm still a fan of Pavlov's, as his work was pivotal in understanding learning and behavior in humans and other animals. Again, I love the show." And that's great, because that's always my experience with finding out more about science and science experiments, is that it's always a little bit amazing and a little bit creepy. Depends on which side you look at it, you know?
Yeah, so share your amazing stories or creepy stories with us. Whether you're on Facebook, we're at Stuff from the Science Lab, or Twitter, we're on Lab Stuff, or send us an email at sciencestuff@howstuffworks.com.
Yeah, let us know what you're up to and check out those sites, and you'll be able to see what we're up to.
All right, thanks for listening, guys.
more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Want more HowStuffWorks? Check out our blogs on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.